Hi, this is Mei Peng, and guess what? You're listening to Fab Four Free For All.
Welcome to another edition of the Fab Four Free For All. My name is Rob Leonard, and I am your moderator for today's show. Joining me, of course, are my co-hosts and friends, Mitch Axelrod.
Hey, from Lagos. How you doing?
And, of course, Tony Trigordo.
Hey, from some porch somewhere in Aurora, New York. But anyway.
Anyway, today we're going to talk about something that Paul McCartney has gone back to many times for releases and re-releases and differences and blah, blah, blah. But this one's a slightly different version from the previous ones. It's called Band on the Run, but it is also, in parentheses, underdubbed. Not missing dubs, but underdubbed. I'm not sure what that means. But we do know that it's another release of Band on the Run. It's a two CD set. Paul has decided, at least for this set, to go back to the American release and include Hell in Wheels, which, for those who don't know, was not recorded for the album, but was released as a single before the album came out. And Capitol Records had said to Paul, hey, Paul, we can guarantee like 500,000 more copies being sold if you put on Hell in Wheels. So, Paul, if you remember, Red Rose Speedway just came out. It wasn't the greatest seller, even though My Love was on it. And Paul said, okay, I'll do it. And like many things with Paul, it stays in the back of his head. And then finally, when he did the box set back in 2011, 2012, he moved Hell in Wheels to the bonus disc. And then it went back to the original British version. And now Paul is bringing back Hell in Wheels into Band on the Run. So maybe because it's his choice now, it's better. I don't know. Hell in Wheels is a great song. I think it helps Band on the Run only because it makes it 10 songs, not 9.
Yeah.
But yeah, he didn't include it on the underdubbed version. So
there you go. That was in my notes.
Yeah, we'll talk about that too. But it seems now that Hell in Wheels, that the version, the U.S. version, is now like going to be the universal version again. And I don't mean universal in meaning universal music. I mean around the world, the global one. I mean, what gives, Paul? But I'm not complaining.
I'm not either.
Helen, you're right, Rob. It's a short album. Short album in terms of songs.
Yeah,
but songs. But yeah, it's, you know, there's only 9, and you know, you feel a little jip. But with Hell in Wheels, especially the sequencing where they ended up putting it, which we'll get to, but
right.
I think it helps the album.
But we should note that, you know, we're talking about it being quote a short album. But it's still the underdubbed
41 minutes.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, you know, once you get past 21 minutes aside, you know, you're starting to compromise sound quality a little bit.
No, that's true. And there are two long songs in this album. That's one of the problems.
Or yeah,
more problems, than that.
But you know what I mean.
But I mean, you know, you start getting to London Town at 51 and a half minutes or whatever it is. You got problematic pressing stuff going on there.
I don't care. I'll take
and that's
it.
Why that's why London Town hasn't been put out yet. That's why, you know,
there you go.
Yeah, that's the ticket.
That's the ticket.
No, you know what though? I we've always said that Paul just never knows when to cut down a song.
That's true.
And we'll get to it later when we talk about the underdub, but I think it shows there. In the underdubbed.
Oh, you read my notes and I didn't even show them to you.
Funny. We just are always on the same page, Rob.
That's true.
Funny, but I may end up begging to differ, especially in one instance.
You're not allowed to, by the way.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
We all have to agree or this video doesn't go out.
Yeah,
that's how we roll.
Yeah, that's how we roll. That's why we do what we do. Right. Now, Mitch, you have a listing of all the releases of Band on the Run because...
Yes, I do.
This has been released so many different times.
Yes, so let's go through them, shall we?
Yes, please.
We have an Well, this might take the full hour.
Do we have to raise our hands? I mean, it won't be heard in the audio version, but do we have to raise our hands if we own that version? Or
well, it's going to be interesting.
Oh, that's a good point. I like that.
We can't do that.
The 73, it originally came out, we said, UK without Helen Wheels, US with Helen Wheels.
Right.
Different back covers, too. US had Denny in the middle, and UK had Linda in the middle. And that's important because the latest release, being the US, someone came out and said, hey, is that a mistake? They messed up with the pictures on the back. I'm like, oh, for good God's sake. No, just they did it differently back in 73.
Right. Anyway,
so this one, the next one, most people are not going to have. In 1981, Columbia had a half-speed remastered vinyl. Now, that one is a very expensive one. Supposedly, it's very good. But I don't have it. I mean, we're all not raising our hand.
No.
In 1993, the 20th anniversary, the UK only Paul McCartney collection release. And that had Helen Wheels and Country Dreamers bonus tracks.
Sure.
I have that one.
Vinyl? No, that wasn't a vinyl.
No,
CD only. It was a CD.
Yeah, and you left out one. I don't mean to be funny, but you also left out one very important one because it sold extremely well.
Which one?
The picture disc.
That's right. There was a picture disc.
Yes, I'm sorry. You're right.
And there was also a quad version.
Yes.
Which we're still waiting for a release, but
yeah,
we'll get to that.
In 1996, it was put out a 5.1 music disc, which I don't have.
I don't
either. That's interesting, too. 2007, we skipped to. I'm sorry. 1999, the 25th anniversary, sort of, released to coincide, obviously, with 25 years since the album really took off in March of 74 after the slow start, because as we all know, Band on the Run was not a big hit when it first came out. It took a while for the public to really hold on to it. And so in March of 74, it went to number one. So that's what they're trying to do in 1999 with 25 years. And that had Helen Wheels as track 8, as it was on the US. Then in 2007, it was available on iTunes. Now, again, that's not so, well, you can buy it, but 2010 is when the archive collection started. My God, I can't believe it's 14 years ago. And that had the remastered UK version, as Rob said. The bonus disc had Helen Wheels and others from One Hand Clapping and everything, and many different variations. And then we get to this new one, which is weird because it's half speed mastered, not remastered. So it's not a remastered version. And as Rob said, it comes with the underdub mixes. There's also streams of Dolby Atmos 2, which I heard is amazing, and vinyl and CD variations. Now, the CD is just the 2010 archive edition. It's
now,
not
with the bonus tracks, though.
Yes.
Okay.
I believe so. I'd have to go back and check, but I'm honestly. And the half-speed mastered version that we get on vinyl was taken from a high-resolution, track. So it's digitally remastered, which, again, most people hate. Thank you, MFSL and Friday Music.
Well,
they do it a lot.
Right.
But this one's done really well, as we'll talk about. But a lot of people can't get over the fact that they remastered it from digital files. But it sounds really great. So
one more thing, Mitchell. The 25th anniversary had a second disc that was a documentary of the making of Band on the Run, which carried over to the box set. And also had some live and rare tracks on that too. So
that's right. Which one was the? Which one came in a box configuration?
That was the 99, I think. The little box.
That was one. Yeah, where it's like a clam. It's like not a clamshell.
Not a clamshell, but an actual little box.
Yeah.
Just like Brainwashed did at.
Right. Yes. Exactly. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, a little black box. And then the archive, obviously. But so, I mean, we're talking about a lot of different releases of Band on the Run already. Do we need
another one? I know it's Paul's breakout album, the album that proved not just to his fans, but to like the critics that, hey, he's old Paul McCartney again. And I think that always plays in the back of Paul's head when the stuff gets re-released. I mean, there's no real reason for this to have happened the way it happened, but I understand you know, it's not that expensive. Let's put it this way. It's not overpriced. It's two discs that go for like $20 most places. Right.
I mean, the album definitely absolutely holds a place of pride.
Yeah.
For Paul's concerned. There are so many questions about like what goes through his mind when he does it. The one thing that's probably a reality that we don't really stop to look at or think about is that, well, other than the B-sides that came out, they're probably really, like people say, well, for a lot of other McCartney records, you'd think, well, but there are outtakes, because we always know that there are so many outtakes, or there's tracks, or there's...
Right.
With Band on the Run, I think because of the time constraints involved and because of the studio constraints involved, I don't think there's a lot of outtake material to work with Band on the Run. So I think when he's going to try to do something, I think it's hard for him to do anything beyond just working with what he already has and doing something like this, you know, demuxing the tracks and doing...
Yeah, no, that's a good point, because even on the archive box, there was not a lot of, I don't think there's, except for the one hand clapping stuff, really, it's like they only did these 9 songs and Lagos and, you know, and that's it. I mean,
demos were stolen. So
yeah. And we also know that, you know, it's not the best place in the world to be recording. And maybe Paul decided, okay, I've done my thing, which Paul likes to do. He likes a new thing, a new area to record in, or castle, or, you know, street corner, whatever. And he, I think, said, well, we got to get out of here and, you know, let's go back to London and finish it up.
Absolutely. And if you notice too, like on later records, you know, very often you'll see written up in Beatle World, or you'll see Paul make a comment and say, you know, oh, well, that was a song we had that was left over from blah. That's a song that was left over from blah. If you think about it, later records, there's nothing that was left over from Band on the Run.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
really. You know, so I think, you know, it'd be lovely to see, like, all of a sudden, oh, there's an early version of Magneto Entertainium Man or something. But I don't think that stuff was written yet. I don't think that's.
I still think there's a way, you know, when the archive collection came out, there was a 45 for Record Store Day. A Band on the Run, and I still would love them to fit Country Dreamer on here somewhere. I mean, maybe if there's, I don't know if there's an underdub.
But I thought you said that. Oh, in other words, but I thought you said
on the vinyl.
So the vinyl, the new vinyl. That's right. The new
is just the album, and that's it.
And there's a double album with the underdubbed.
Yeah.
So
okay,
it would have been nice if they could have, at least on the CD, of just the regular Band on the Run, not the underdubbed.
Really can't see it with the background. Yeah.
Sorry,
it's just, you know, like it's white. Yeah. If they had put like Country Dreamer, like Zoo Gang, they already have Hell and Wheels on the, you know, the CD that came with this set. You know, that would have been a nice little bonus thing, just to make it. You know, I mean, I'm going to buy this, I guess. I already have it. But, you know, I don't know if I would have bought it if I was looking to save a dollar or something. You know, it's just something about, I don't know. But
what do you have? You have Country Dreamer, Zoo Gang.
Yeah.
And, Country Dreamer, Zoo Gang, not I Lie Around.
No, that's earlier.
That's earlier, yeah.
Country Dreamer and Zoo Gang.
Right? Yeah.
There's not a lot, I mean, that we know of. Again, that we know of. Maybe he didn't want to do it again. Again, we're speculating. But maybe he didn't want to do all of that again for another, quote, archive collection of this on the 50th. Maybe he just wanted to give us the underdub because he already gave us the archive. And kudos to Andrew at Polygram Videos. He spoke to Miles Scholl, the guy who cut the album, and Miles was told at Abbey Road, and Miles was told that McCartney's group, team, considers the archive collection to be the gold standard. So maybe he didn't want to usurp what they already put out 14 years ago by doing another big box and making us pay for that, when there's hope that London Town and Back to the Egg hopefully will come out this year. And then at least I feel I won't be gypped if I have to spend for another big Band on the Run, and also for the the two that
Well, my thing is, you know, was this tape around when they did Band on the Run's archive version? You know, why?
No, I don't think so.
This was found afterwards, I guess.
No. There was nothing to be found. This wasn't found.
But this should have been really included in the archive box. You know, that's the type
of thing. About it.
Look, yeah, right, exactly. Yeah. I mean, the idea is, I don't think, listening to it, I don't really think of it as being like a cash grab.
No, I don't either.
I don't think that this is something that McCartney would have had. I just don't think it was something he really thought about or considered doing for the archive collection. Somebody might have just put it in his head that, you know, Mac, it's 50 years Band on the Run. You should do something.
Well, here's the thing, Tony.
And the thing is, if you do go in and you listen to, you know, you pull out the master tape and you put the master tape up and you start going like this and you start going, oh, I forgot about that vocal. Oh, I forgot about that. Oh, this sounds cool with this missing. Then it becomes, yeah, you know what? I could do this with the 9 tracks.
Well, to your point,
put this together.
Exactly to your point, Tony, and I'm glad you brought it up, because maybe, you know, he's been putting out all of his archive releases on half-speed remasters anyway, half-speed masters anyway, all of them. Okay, so this was next in line. So maybe with the 50th, he said, okay, not only will we put out the half-speed master for the 50th, because we're going to do it anyway, because everybody it's the next in line, maybe we'll give them more for their buck, even though it'll cost a little bit more, and give them the underdubbed LP as well, which in that case, it's not a cash grab, unless you just, you know, negative and don't want to buy it and say it's a cash grab. That's fine.
Right, it's value added. I mean,
agreed.
Let's be honest. I was not, and under any circumstance, going to go out and buy a 50th anniversary of Band on the Run if it was going to be nothing but the same one that was in the archive box.
Right. You know, that part's true.
You know, and I wasn't going to buy it. And despite the fact, yeah, I know it sounds great, I wasn't going to go run out and buy a vinyl that was mastered from digital when I may as well just play the digital.
Right. No, that's a good point. And, you know, it's like the Beatles stereo box set. They took it from the digital masters, but the mono is from the mono analog tapes, and there is a difference.
Definitely. You
know, we've heard the difference. We don't like to point it out all the time, but there is a difference. One thing about this thing is, you know, what you said, Tony, that some people said, well, this is a money grab. And can we honestly say that Paul McCartney needs the money? You know, he doesn't.
Well,
you know, no, I mean,
that's not the point.
I know that, but some people, you see that's the response when people get angry about anything now. It's a money grab. You know, Now and Then was a money grab. No, it wasn't. And neither is this. I mean, this is something else.
But no performer's in business to lose money. I mean, you know,
that's a good point. But, you know, he's not saying, well, I need to add, you know, this amount of money to my bank account.
Yeah.
No, but sorry.
No, I was going to say, you know, you could look at it as a legacy grab. And I don't say that negatively. I'm saying,
no, that's a positive thing.
You can look at it as, you know what? I've got another opportunity to take what was my biggest record and hock it again with a new angle.
That's a good point. Now I like the legacy thing. That's actually I like that tarmac. I'm going to steal that. That's a good one.
We should have Then we should have had this discussion when he put out 2 or 3 years ago the McCartney One album Half Speed Master, because that he had put them out already archive wise. So, you know, is that a cash grab?
No, because amazing. vinyl was making a huge comeback.
Correct, but now legacy as I said, grab. Yeah, but as I said, yes, it's a legacy grab. But as I said before, because he already has done he has already set the precedent by putting out every album in order half speed mastered.
Yeah,
this was going to come out anyway.
Of course.
So he gave us value added with the underdog. Right.
So what you're saying to is,
great.
So what you're saying too is based on, and again, you know, shout out, and you know, we're always proud of our own work, but we are, you know, you and I both, Mitch, both watch Andrew's works, And Andrew from Parlagram was talking about the idea that from an audio standpoint, and he does a video where he compares all the different releases, that it's your first generation British pressing, and it's now this one in terms of how great they sound on vinyl.
There was like a Nautilus pressing in 84. Yes. I forgot also.
Right, yep. Right. And you know what? I mean, I'd be curious to talk to another audiophile other than Andrew, no disrespect, Matt, but another audiophile who maybe has, you know, the Nautilus, their first British, and this one to see where this falls. Because if this is creating the new one for this generation on vinyl, because no one's going to be able to go out and get it. Not everyone's going to go out and get a first pressing British. That's not going to happen. So no. If this is your new gold standard for you know, LP, then that's cool. That's great. And you get the bonus. You get the underdub.
Yeah, no, good point. Good point.
And I will say the packaging for the 2LP set with the, it has a slip case. It's gorgeous. It's and it has two posters of Linda's Polaroids.
Cool.
So, well, I'm just, again, they're not jipping out on us. I mean, and it was like $60. So quite frankly, if you're paying 35 for the half speed, you know, 60, you're actually paying less for two of them.
Right. And it's nice that they include the poster because it's a fun thing to have.
There's two separate posters.
Yeah, no, it's cool. And I like the fact that the cover isn't the same as the original Band on the Run that has the three photos from the back on the front, and it's a white background.
I think
I think that was a wise thing. First of all, it stands out. But second of all, if you're going to do something like this, and this is one thing I noticed while listening, and I'll bring it up right now, this sounds more like a Wings album than a Paul McCartney and Wings album, because you're hearing a lot of more of Denny's playing and singing, I think. And the mix, I think this mix is also, for the underdubbed, extremely well done. I love this mix a lot better.
Well, can I bring up one more point before we go forward?
Yeah,
sure.
Because I wanted to talk about this. We've talked about it before, and we don't have to spend a lot of time on it. I just want to put it out there. Okay, I know Tony, you had said, and Rob, you both said, you know, it's his album that he considers the best and biggest selling and blah, blah, blah. And it is. But I hate when they keep touting it as his masterpiece. Because you know what? He's done 50 years of albums after Band on the Run.
Right.
And quite frankly, Band on the Run is not my go-to McCartney album. It's not. So it may be a masterpiece. But I have to tell you, I can name at least two or three that I think are better than Band on the Run. And I'm not here to debate this. I don't care.
I agree.
You got to remember, A, we're geeks. And yeah. B, you know, the idea being that when an album's a masterpiece, I mean, like the artist always confuses me when you go with his masterpiece. The fun that I have with that is that, like, Elton John, you know, for God's sake, you can go for any one of the first six albums.
Yeah, which one is his masterpiece?
Not Empty Sky, but which one of those is his masterpiece? You know, A Good Viola Rick Road, that's the masterpiece. No, that's the longest one. You know, I mean, so.
Yeah, but Tony, that you just said the first six. If you go for the first four McCartney solo albums, Band on the Run is his masterpiece.
That's exactly where I was going to go. A person like Elton John, it's really difficult to do because those first albums all sold so brilliantly.
Right.
That you can't really, with McCartney, what is the album that hit a chord with the music buying and listening audiences at the time it was released stronger than any other McCartney album, at least before Tug of War?
Well, I was going to say Tug of War, but
But again, his masterpiece, you're looking at, well, Paul McCartney and Wings. People could argue that, well, then Tug of War, Paul McCartney, solo, already, that was.
I hate when they do that.
Well, you know what it is? A lot of it comes from critics. You know, how many times have we read best album since Band on the Run? You know, and that goes to, like, you know, Flaming Pie even. Like, you know, it's just an easy thing to say, well, it's the best one since.
Now it's got to be, for me, it's got to be best album since Memory Almost Full.
Yeah.
You know,
Or, you know, to me, or you know, I love Flaming Pie tremendously. So,
and I'm a big, you know, I'm a big. I know we're not gonna, but London Town to me, I
love London Town
before Band on the Run. And again, I love Band on the Run.
Right, but it's not like we're dismissing it.
Right. It's just that and you're right, Rob. It is a lot of times, you know, dictated by the critics, because the critics hated the first three, and now all of a sudden, 50 years later, Ram is a masterpiece, and Red Rose Parade is not bad, and even Wildlife, my goodness, it's getting better. You know, it's like, stop. You know,
I don't know about that.
See, Ram. I mean, you guys always. Ram is probably my single favorite of the McCartney.
Ram is a great album, but again, back then, even when I first got it, I didn't think it was a great album, because I got it exactly when it came out. I didn't think it was a great album. There was a lot of stuff on it I loved. And Band on the Run, even when I got Band on the Run, first, you know, again, right when it came out, I was not a fan of Mamounia. I was not a fan of No Words. I wasn't even a fan of Picasso's Last Words. I wasn't. I loved the way Paul sang it, but I was like, eh, it's okay. You know, I thought it went on too long. And so it wasn't like it hit a chord with me right away. I mean, obviously Jet and Band on the Run, the singles, my God. And Bluebird, you know, Bluebird sounds like he could have recorded it today and it would still be number one. But it wasn't like it took me, I know, you know, it sold really well, but even as we said earlier in the show, it didn't catch on right away.
That's why 74, he didn't put out a record, because Capitol and AMI said, hey, you know what, we found a way to sell this as an album with these great singles. And then all of a sudden, the critics got behind it. And, you know, there was a lot of things going on and that led to 74, you know, which is a Paul McCartney year, even though he didn't release a full album or anything. He worked on McGear with his brother, which was a Wings album with Mike.
Right.
But it's not a, you know, official release, you know.
But Rob, and there's the irony there, because I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mitch.
I was going to say, can you imagine if it didn't catch on like they wanted?
Yeah.
Band on the Run would be an afterthought.
Yep.
Not a masterpiece.
For me, it's really funny, because I will probably, don't get me wrong, I love the Band on the Run album in its way, but I probably have listened to McGear more in the last 15 years, 20 years than I have Band on the Run.
And that's, for me, it's the opposite. I never caught on to McGear.
You never grew to the McGear.
McGear is a good album. You know, I'd like to see it released as a Paul McCartney archive series. I know Mike McGear or Mike McCartney put out his own archive version of it.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, so, great. But people forget that, you know, Paul produced it and he co-wrote most of the songs with Mike and he plays on it, even though it's not listed. So
I wonder if there's a version of the McGear album with all Paul singing guide vocals.
No,
I think they were written together.
Yeah, I think those.
Like
those
we brought it in.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's why I just didn't. I wanted to at least put it out there that I hate when they keep saying it's his masterpiece. Stop. Yeah, it's a great album. It did a lot for him at the time, because if it tanked, I don't know where Paul's career would have. You know, I don't know where it would have taken him, quite frankly.
Yeah, well, it led to, you know, he didn't tour after that right away. It took 2 years to get going. But that, you know, Band on the Run leads to the two Wings albums and then the 75 tour and then the 76 Wings Over America tour. So
otherwise, it would have been the epilogue or News in Welch.
Anyway, let's start off with the tracks for the underdubbed version of
Underdubbed. Well, Rob, why don't you say this?
What?
Why don't we just say that the album itself, because we're not going to go through the album.
No, I just wanted to say what's different. I'm not going to talk about that.
No, We've done that. I'd like to go through. I mean, there's nine tracks. It's not, you know, I mean.
No, you mean the regular album or the underdubbed?
No, the underdubbed.
You're right. I was just going to say in general, because I have the Half-Speed Mastered vinyl, that I think it sounds brilliant, like Andrew Paul Graham said. That's all I want to say. Okay. I want to say that it sounds amazing. It sounds clear. Everything, you know, the instrumentation is amazing. And it will be my go-to Band on the Run from now on, because it does have Helen Wheels, and it's so I grew up with it being in the U.S., but it sounds, if anybody is really going, well, maybe not, go get this, because if you're a big Band on the Run fan and you have the money, go get it, because it's totally worth it. So now we can start with the underdubbed.
Cool. Okay, the underdub version starts off, which you have to, with Band on the Run. And, you know, the beginning, you don't really, it's all guitars, so you don't notice the missing orchestration.
But you do, you're missing the guitar stings at the beginning. Yes.
That's true.
A bunch of lead guitar stings.
Yeah, that's true.
Which is jarring at first.
I didn't miss it as much because I was waiting to see what they did with the middle part, and that's where it kind of lost me a little bit. That da na 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 da, and you know when you hear it on the regular album, it's like it's overtaking the song and it's taking it someplace else.
Yes.
On the underdub version, I'm underwhelmed. I guess is the best way to say that. And also the edit of the strumming from that part is really, really obvious. And, you know, sometimes, you know, when you mix things, sometimes you bury it. And they did a great job on the regular Band on the Run sort of to bury that. So that was one of the things that bothered me a little bit, was that middle section. And then there's that part where it goes like eight bars or something where they ended up cutting it out. But on the underdub version, it's there because... You know, it's like Paul was made a mistake almost, and then he realized, oh, I got to wait till the bars happen. And then reminds me of that two-bar thing in I Am the Walrus.
I'm the Walrus.
Yeah.
Where John starts to sing and goes, ooh, but they kept it in on the Anthology 2 version. So that would be my problem with Band on the Run. I liked it, obviously, but so, you know, what do you guys think of the first track of this album?
Well, I'm going to tell you, in general, again, I found for a lot of these that I didn't miss a lot of the stuff that's missing.
So for me,
is that a compliment or an indictment of the overproduction of the original?
No, you know what I think it is? And well, no, go ahead. I'll let you finish.
No. So as far as Band on the Run, listen, nobody, I know every time I see people review this, I don't see anybody say that there's different lead vocals. There are definitely different lead vocals.
Yeah, absolutely.
I know, but nobody says anything. It's always like, okay, this is just the same vocals, but they didn't, you know, put on this or put on that.
No, this has definite different lead vocal.
Oh my God. I mean,
not all of it, but parts of it.
Absolutely. Right,
as soon as Band on the Run starts, he says, and the rain exploded instead of, well, the rain exploded.
Right.
Like, if you don't think that's a different vocal, hello, you haven't been listening. But I like a lot of the ad-libs throughout that you get to hear now, the little things, you know, in the song, which is kind of cool. It does need the orchestration. I think Band on the Run is one of the songs that definitely benefited because you said it's like a suite. So there's edits that need covering and stuff. But, you know... I think it's okay. This one to me was underwhelming, as you said, you know, underdubbed, underwhelmed. But Tony?
I think to your comment, Mitch, about, you know, is it a compliment or a
indictment?
An indictment. I think hearing it unadorned, I think what you're doing is you're realizing that these are really good songs.
Yes.
Band on the Run is a good song. And the idea is, up until this point, McCartney's was struggling a little bit as a songwriter. There are some, don't get me wrong, like I said, we love Ram, but does Ram have a lot of really well-written songs? Monkberry Moon Delight's a lot of fun.
Yes, that's different.
Are you going to sit there and go, what a well-written song, Monkberry Moon Delight, you know,
right,
in the attic with a piano up my nose, you know? But
no,
with Band on the Run, it's, you know, hearing it without the lead guitars, like I said, it's weird. But you could sit around at a party with people with acoustic guitars, one of Rob's parties, obviously.
No.
Yes, of course.
But you could sit around at a party with a bunch of people with acoustic guitars, and you could play Band on the Run.
You know what? I can't believe you said that.
It's going to sound like this. And
Tony, my God, in my sheet right here, and I'm not kidding, I said this makes it more of an acoustic album.
Absolutely.
Yes. And
absolutely. Wow, I can't believe you just said
that. Paul's drum work, I got to tell you.
Have that too. Stop.
Paul's drum work is ass-kicking on that track. It's really fun.
Well, it's ass-kicking on a lot of tracks.
A lot of tracks.
And there are a couple of great clams too, which we'll get
to. Oh, yeah.
Well, I was going to bring up the drum part, but I'll wait to the individual song because some of those songs, I'm like, first of all, is that Paul drumming? Because his style wasn't matching what I'm used to hearing, I think of a Paul drum style, which is, he tends to play a lot of notes, I think, at least to me. But
his bass, he plays a lot of melodic.
Yes, that's a good point.
He's not Ringo.
That's true. That's true. Right. So
he plays too much to the song, and Ringo plays to the song.
Yes. So I like I said, Band on the Run's not bad, but that middle section is what I don't miss the guitars. And that's a good point, Tony, because I didn't think about the guitars because I thought the beginning part was so good, and that's one thing about this album. There's certain songs that, did you need Tony Visconti's orchestration? And I don't know. And I'd like to know what Tony Visconti thinks of this.
I'd be curious.
Because and the other thing, one more thing before I get to the next track. One thing I like about this is no bleeding between the tracks. If you on Because,
I see what you mean. Yeah,
there's a little bleed from one track where they on the Love album they put the crickets over it a little bit so you wouldn't notice it.
Right.
But on the Anthology 3, you hear just a little bit of a leakage. You don't hear any leakage on any of these tracks. That's because.
These are tracks that were done live. A lot of this, let's say, is the foundation of the tracks done live in the studio. You would hear bleed if you were hearing a lot of the overdubs and people were standing with their
headphones
too close to the microphones.
Oh, okay. Right.
And that's often where you get a lot of the bleed. Like, there's a really famous tape going around of Elton John doing a lot of the songs from Rock of the Westies. Just him on piano and vocals. And everybody always kind of moans and goes, it's such an amazing bootleg, but on certain songs you hear bleed through. Well, it's because Elton's got to be wearing a pair of headphones listening to what's going on while
he plays
piano and does his vocal.
Right.
But of course you're hearing bleed through, But anyway.
Now we should say, we didn't mention this yet, but the underdub version of Band on the Run is not the same order of the version we know and love. Right. And I have to say, the order works a lot better with the underdubbed version. I would like to do a thing where
I don't know about that. I don't think Let Me Roll It would be a good closer.
Oh, I do. I think that it says a lot as your last song, as what some people have claimed that it's about. I think at that time, as the end song, it plays better than 1985.
Well, you know what? The album's over. Paul says, all right, the album's over. Let me go. Just roll a big fat one and just chill out.
No, but you know what? I mean, I was even thinking about it. Mrs. Vanderbilt could have been good because at the end with that wicked laugh, and that would have been kind of cool to end it with the ho-hey-hos. Whatever. Yeah. But you're right. It's not the same order, and it actually makes for a different listening experience,
which
is good because I think – If I would have put this on right after listening to the Half Speed and had the same order and missing some stuff, I would be like, okay. But because I didn't know what was next, because I didn't put the album next to me, it's a surprise. So it was kind of cool. Yeah.
So the next song is Mamunia. And I have to say, first of all, this is clean. This is like maybe one of the cleanest songs on the whole album. I happen to like this version better than the Band on the Run version.
Go ahead.
I'm not sure why I like it so much, and I think part of it has to do with what Mitch said before. When I first got Band on the Run, this song was not on my favorites list, and I think because of that, I appreciate this underdub version more.
I didn't even miss Rob. I didn't even miss what I still couldn't tell you what's missing, because first of all, it's 5 minutes long. He needed to cut this down by 2 minutes. Okay,
definitely.
I'm sorry.
That's fine.
But he does. But and we said it. Come on, Motor of Love, 6:21. We know
Motor
what
of
he,
love.
He doesn't stop. He just keeps doing that. But the percussion is Dean.
Yep.
I sat there, and you know, as a drummer, even if I'm not a drummer, I love the sound of good percussion in a song, and this is so clean that the percussion just shines through, and it takes hold of the song, and it makes me, as you said, it makes me appreciate it a hell of a lot more, because this was relegated to the B-side on the single. Yep. And it was let's face it, an album track. Not you know, I mean, a little better than Loop, but still, you know, no. But I mean, it's really, you know, there are words to it, but it's not exactly the poetic brilliance of Paul McCartney with Mammonia.
No, but it's sweet though.
It is sweet. Yeah. But sweet. McCartney and always does sweet.
Yeah, but again, I'm sorry.
No, so that's all. I'm just saying, I have a new appreciation for it. It needed to be shorter, and especially with the underdub, I think you definitely see that hear that it needs to be shorter.
I'm on board with everything that's just been said. I really do genuinely like this version better than the original.
Me too.
There's something
What am I missing on it though? Because the vocals,
it seemed like the vocals, and I could be wrong, but the chorally Mammonia. Mammonia always felt like it was like going through a Leslie or something.
Maybe,
but it always felt, the vocals always sounded like there was something affected in the vocals. Gone. I could be wrong. It may just be my ears playing
tricks. You're remembering.
Yeah. No, I mean, I played it today and I still, in the original studio version, I still feel like there's something on the vocals a little bit. They're gone here. And I just love the feel of this one.
I do too. It's there's a lot of, you know, as the second song in the album, I'm not sure if it's that's the proper place, but it plays so well. I didn't even think about it, you know?
And the weird thing is, like I said before, the fact that I cannot even right now tell you what I'm missing.
Yes.
Means that it's a good song, but it's also the fact that I enjoyed this version and I didn't even care what the original release was. I love this one. So again, just too long, but other than that.
Yes. Yeah, no, I agree. The third song on the album is No Words, where Denny gets his first vocal or part vocal on a Wings album. He had it lie around before that. I happen to like this version too. I like what Linda and Denny's harmonies are doing on this song a lot.
Absolutely.
And a lot of these, yeah.
And that's something that I really enjoy on this, because you forget how they were really good with each other with harmonies.
Yes.
And you don't think of that as much because everyone likes to make fun of Linda as a singer. But when she was singing with Denny and of course, Paul, her vocals and harmonies, or I should say her harmonies, were much better than people give her credit for.
Definitely.
Absolutely. That made Wings sound.
Yeah, that if you're going to do a Wings cover band, you need that type of, you know, female talent, meaning that it doesn't have to be a perfect singer, but you have to know, you know, how to sing like Linda did, which is, you know, sometimes it wasn't as good as it could have been, but most of the time it worked, and this is one of the places it worked, at least for me.
You bet, yeah.
Listen, it worked on me with Wildlife. It worked on I Am Your Singer. I thought she was great for what the song needed.
Yep.
She was perfect for it.
Right.
We're not talking about, you know, I know there was Cook of the House, but for most of Wings, her third part harmony made Wings sound.
Yes.
On the underdubbed, we'll get to a couple others, which I really have that written, but you can tell, and I'm glad that she's being appreciated, because she's, like, as you said, Rob, she doesn't get appreciated for her singing. I'm not saying she's great. All right. We all heard the Hey Jude thing, which is ridiculous in itself, but quite frankly, without Linda, Wings is a different sounding band.
Definitely. The next song is Jet.
I'm sorry, Tony. One of my favorite songs on the album. Always
it's sweet.
And it's funny you said, here is a sweet alternative version.
There you go.
Missing the chops on the finished one. Again, McCartney's bass work. Couple of real good drumming clams.
Yeah.
I never realized how much melody is going on underneath the "You're Burning Love, Sweet Burning Love." There's a lot of stuff happening under there that's a little bit drowned out by the orchestra.
Correct.
In the final version. And then at the end, they take on these two lead guitar parts, and somebody must have flubbed something. Because why doesn't that go on longer? They're doing those two lead, real nice guitar leads. Somebody had to have clammed right after the fade out, because that I could have taken that for another minute, you know. Yeah. But anyway.
That I like when Paul does that type of thing on making his songs longer when they should be shorter, is if he plays it out, then it's different than when he just keeps repeating the same verse.
Yeah.
Well, unless you're talking about 6 o'clock, that extended is not exactly what we want.
Oh, yeah. I like the 6 o'clock. I love the extended version.
Show, but it's, you know, come on.
I'm talking about We Got Married, which should have been like a 2.5 minutes. It's like 4.5.
Don't get me started, Motor of Love.
that's like a whole other show. Just like just all the show. Motor of Love. Now Paul McCartney songs that go on for way too freaking long.
You know what? Yeah. That's not a bad topic. Thank you.
It's really funny.
You just gave us a good topic. Yeah, go ahead, Bob.
And you know what? One thing, just to finish that thought off, when the anthology, when he started to go through the tapes, when he'd go visit at EMI and hang out with George Martin and Jeff Emmerich, all of a sudden he realized, geez, we did 2.5 minute songs in 3 hours. Why am I spending 6 months on one song that's going for 17 minutes or something?
Right.
Or 4 minutes, 5 minutes, when it should be two. Anyway, the next song... Oh, I have to say, it's not the same without the horns. Jet. If this was the version that was played in stadiums, like it gets played in stadiums, it would not be played in stadiums.
Let me tell you right now, it has great ad libs. All right.
Yes, it does. Yes,
the harmonies and the ending is fun. But I will say one thing, just one word: Moog. I mean,
oh God!
And you want to just—it's hidden with all the orchestration and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, but when you hear it here, I just want to go in the studio and hit him over the head and say, "What are you doing? That is the worst sounding." It's going to actually help me, help my constipation. It was so annoying. The Moog whatever you call it, the Moog. The Moog. It goes on and like a bad drone, and it's like Tomorrow Never Knows, you know, the original version, except this is 10 times worse because it's so loud in the mix, and it just really is, it's tough to take for the 3-4 minutes for the song. It really is.
One thing I do like about this song, and this involves Mitch because you're the drummer, that part, that drum middle, that does not sound like Paul again playing drums. Oh. It's like, did Ginger Baker sneak in and do something?
Not just that,
Jeff Britton came in.
Not just that, but the fill that actually opens the song.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's Paul.
That's Paul. That's Paul. Damn, that's a really great fill.
Listen, Paul. Paul's not a bad drummer. He's not technically like Ringo. It's not like a metronome because he's all over the place a lot. But he is very melodic, as we said before. And that comes from the way he plays bass. That's him as a musician. He needs to add, and he always does. But this time with the drums, you know, you have no choice. So he got creative.
Well, you hear much later, and you hear it's like Mick Fleetwood's almost joined the band. I was just amazed that that was Paul playing the drums. I was just very impressed with that. I was just like, wow, because you don't notice it as much in the orchestrated version or the released version, whatever you want to call it. So
it was, two things. I was in my notes, I was saying this is the closest thing so far on the album to being a bootleg version.
Yes.
This sounds like something that you would have heard on bootleg. If there was also over the years, there was a
good point,
like
a monitor mix, you know,
there was a bootleg with it. It was like based on the quad 8-track of Band on the Run.
Right.
And there were like, remixes from that 4-track, you know, and some of these, there are definitely similarities. The instrumental breaks a little weird. And I wrote this and it made me laugh. It's 73. Glam is happening. And if you listen to Jet and you think about, you know, the Jet, you know, that kind of thing, There's one point where I heard the song playing in this incarnation and went, Bay City Rollers could have done this. Like, it actually has like a like it's could have, if this song had taken a different turn, it would have been McCartney's glam single.
Yeah, I think Bowie could have done it.
Who?
Bowie.
No, it's too edgy for Bowie.
Maybe T-Rex.
T-Rex. Yeah, well, right. Jeter, Jetster, I don't know. Anyway.
And the other thing I noticed about this version is that the backing vocals are much more noticeable.
Yes. Great harmonies, though. A little bit at the end. The harmonies
at the end. I have the same thing. Well, I say I like the scat ending, but it's so different because that's one of the songs that there's a major difference. I think I have all the ones here. Even Band on the Run sounds similar to most plots, but Jet, you know, we need that. Even that ending.
Paul does it with his voice.
Yes, that's right. You're right. You're right. That was
the horns at the end.
That was cool. Anyway, the next one is Bluebird. To me, I realize that you don't really need the orchestration on this one either.
Except the sax solo.
The sax solo, but you know what? No. I didn't miss it.
I love the sax solo. I love it. But the song still has a really sweet groove and a sweet sway.
Yep.
Without the horn solo. The horn solo makes it funky. It makes it, you know. But
it makes it very romantic. It does.
Absolutely. I mean, look, the original is so simple that it almost makes it odd to have this version. But if you didn't know the song, would you know what was missing? If you didn't know the song, you played this for someone,
the person
would be just like doing this during the sax solo, you know, the groove, you know, doing a little rock back and forth.
Right.
And then when it comes back in, you kind of go, oh, maybe somebody could have soloed there, but they didn't, you know.
You know what? I think, first of all, I do the At Last We Will Be Free. I like that. I'm glad they dubbed it in because it's not here, and I needed that. I really do love the sax solo. I do. I mean,
I
I heard it in my head while this is going on, but everybody will. But I have to tell you, I have such an appreciation for Paul when you hear Bluebird. I still think this could have been a fourth, fifth single. I do. I think Bluebird would have done so well because, again, we're talking 74. We're talking in the midst of all of the singer-songwriters at that point were really hot. You know, the James Taylors, the Carly Simons, the Carole Kings. And I think this would have fit in anywhere on the top 100. You know, maybe it wouldn't have gone, you know, number one, but I think Bluebird is a beautiful, very underrated song in his catalog,
especially after
it makes it more beautiful,
especially after the two rock singles to come out with an acoustic thing would have been kind of nice.
Yeah. Somebody said to me once, did I think that Billy Joel with the sax solo and Just the Way You Are could have been inspired by Bluebird? So I don't know how much of a McCartney fan Billy was.
Well, Richie would have
right, but Billy's choice to have a sax.
Yeah. I don't know.
Anyway.
I don't know. That's a good point.
But it's a beautiful song.
Yeah. No, but it works, you know, as way it is. I mean, it's just incredible if you think about, you know, because he knew he was going to put orchestration in these spots.
Right.
But at the same time, he kind of said, oh, they sound okay to me, you know, but he went with the orchestration, which I understand.
But he always tends to overproduce.
Yeah. A little bit. I don't think Band of the Run is overproduced, but this is underdubbed. There's a difference.
Yeah, I guess.
The next song is a song that Paul added to his live show a few years ago. Very wise choice. Mrs. Vanderbilt. This is a little different also. First of all, the guitars are much higher in the mix. And to me, that changed the song a little bit.
Without a doubt.
Yeah,
and Paul, freaking bass work. But anyway.
Yeah, yeah, that's, and there's also fun screams all over the place, which you don't hear in the.
They're buried, yeah, with the orchestration. But you know, and also there's a couple of times when the ho, the first ho,
is not there.
There, right? And you're like, hey ho, it's like, wait, where's the ho?
Yeah, where'd the ho go?
Where'd the ho go? No, but I mean, you know, I sang it and I'm realizing I sang it by myself. Wait, I need you guys to sing ho with me. So it is kind of weird. And again, like you said, Rob, the ad libs and the fun, you know, sort of like they did with Old Brown Shoe, where, you know, it sounds like a party. With the remix, the Mrs. Vanderbilt sounds like a party, and it sounds still like a party when in the release version, especially at the end with that wicked laugh. But this was different. I mean, definitely a different lead vocal.
Yes,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that the lead guitar is in this version.
Yes.
That wasn't considered a last minute dub, I guess. There are some acoustic guitar flourishes that aren't on the final one, like after the line when your pile is on the wane, there's like a little bit of like a wheelie deedly that isn't on the final. Just fun. It was, you know, it's just a well done, it's a great alternate version, less intense. You know, the ho hey ho's are very like on the released one, really in your face.
Yeah, but that's fun. You know?
It is fun, absolutely. So this one is less intense. It's a little more laid back. It's not.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, it's the party after a couple hours and everybody's a little bit of stoned, you know, they're in the
with the eucalyptus leaf.
The eucalyptus leaf, a little bit of stone.
I didn't know Father Guido Sarducci was visiting.
man.
The next track is my favorite on the whole album.
Wow.
It's an instrumental version of 1985. No vocals except for a little background ooze. This is fantastic because the lyrics, you know, the lyrics, you know, no one ever gets out alive in 1985. And that's basically the lyrics.
It's close. It's not really the lyrics.
Yeah, but it's close enough. So to me, this backing track, which was always a fantastic backing track, gets the spotlight. And to me, I'm listening to this. When I was listening to it, I went back again to listen to it right afterwards because I just loved the sound. I've always loved the piano on this, what Paul did. He kept the full track. You know, sometimes when you do these instrumental only things, sometimes you fade it early, but the repeat of that riff just is a monster riff. You know what it reminds me of a little bit? The bass line of Silly Love Songs, which just comes at you and never stops. This has the same type of riff where it just keeps attacking you almost, and it's like, you know, I'm gonna make you like this song no matter what. And just the instrumental track. So I was very impressed with this. I also was impressed at the end. This is really nice guitar solo.
Yes.
Where did that come from?
And well, you know why? It's very much overshadowed by George Martin's orchestration. Again, nothing wrong with that.
Tony Visconti.
I'm sorry. Did I say George Martin? Wow.
Yes.
Tony Visconti's orchestration in that. When you hear the build on this, and on the record, it's got like noise flying into it too. Like the build up at the end, it's almost like it's Paul's "I Want You" at the end. It's got like the build up and the noise. You know, and then it Band of the Run comes in. But this, I like the fact that it breaks down. I think but it's again something that it's funky. That riff is funky. It's a strong riff. I think it's a little bit long in the instrumental version.
Definitely.
Yes, I don't mind because this has again always been one of my favorite McCartney songs, period. But it's a funky workout on this. And I totally agree with what you were saying, Rob.
Two things for me. First of all, Tony, I think it's too long.
Yeah.
The other two things I was going to say, in this one, the Moog doesn't annoy me.
Right.
The Moog actually helps the feel of this of the track.
Yeah.
Whereas in Jet, it just pisses me off. But after listening to this instrumental version, this could have been a great song on any movie soundtrack.
Definitely.
Ah, I have it written there.
Really?
Yeah.
Because movie I wrote soundtrack. That in my notes. It's a movie soundtrack movie on soundtrack. Wonderful soundtrack song because
yes.
As an instrumental.
Yep.
Well,
totally.
Brilliant.
What movie soundtrack music did he do early in the year? Live and Let Die. Maybe this comes out of that. Ooh. Maybe this was the idea, but he came up with Live and Die because of the title. And ooh. But you're right. This would make a great movie soundtrack. I also think that some hip hop rappers might sample this song, and Paul might be sending his guys out there because you know he's a rapper too now. You know, 4.5 and whatever the other one. The only
4.5 seconds, not 4.5.
Yeah, but I don't.
You are showing your age, my friend.
Yeah, well, it doesn't bother me. It doesn't bother me.
I'm sorry. Don't you do a show called Beatles Songs every Friday?
Yes, I played it once, and I got two phone calls screaming at me, "Why are you playing this shit?"
Wow. So. Yeah, that was from Paul.
hey, Rob, go over the songs. Why are you playing this one? Hey, could you play more? Kanye.
But I can see some rapper taking this riff and really doing well with it because it just has this great attack on you and I happen to love it and I like the ending and it also changes that it doesn't have that I don't want to call it a reprise but the little clip of Band on the Run at the end.
Yeah.
It becomes its own song, I think.
Yeah, but if it's ending the album, it's appropriate that the reprise is there.
Right, but now that it's not, you correct. Don't really need it. And that's right. The other thing about this record. You know, we know that there are parts where they, he puts a riff in from Jet or something, or this or the end of the song with Band on the Run. Those are there, but, well, Band on the Run thing isn't. But it doesn't sound like it's a theme record anymore. At least to me, especially since he changed the order, and
that's interesting.
That there was a theme supposedly, and it also had the cover, so you were thinking about that when you first got it. So, the theme of the Band on the Run, isn't maybe there as much, because of this song, having the Band on the Run.
Yeah,
but I like the ending, the way it just sort of ends, and I'm like, damn, that's really cool. So. Yeah. We got two more songs on this collection. Picasso's Last Words. Okay, everyone. I'm going to let Mitch go first. Or let go Tony go first.
Tony, go first.
Yeah, Tony goes first because I know I'm going to say the same thing as you.
No, I don't know. I don't know what you're going to say.
Oh, okay.
Other than like the ending when it gets really goofy, I think it's lovely. I think.
Really? Okay, then we didn't.
I think it's very. I love Paul's lead vocal in that.
Oh, I have that
totally exactly. Different vocal,
but really and, good.
Yeah, and the little musical interlude where the effects go on the finished version is beautiful. The silliness is gone for the most part. The overall vibe is really nice. Once it gets to like the drunken section at the end, it's a little strange. Reminds me very much of something that Nilsson would have done if he had given yes. it to Harry. Harry again, would have had a pisser.
Almost 5.5 minutes, dude. It's
yeah, but no, I, but and but there are cool guitar bits during the yes. the ooze. There are a couple of nasty clams. There's the Jamaican interjections. I find it funny that here that they're over there, and you got Fela Kuti running around screaming that they're going to steal the Africana vibes. And there's more reggae in here than anything else.
Yeah,
that's true. That's true.
There's no Africana really. So yeah, I mean, too long, definitely.
But this is more noticeable on this version that it's too long. I on the regular version of Band on the Run, I don't mind the three different parts being merged into one song.
Right.
On here, it's a lot more noticeable, and it's not as enjoyable either.
I'll say this, Rob, to your comment. Will this hold up for me on repeated and repeated and repeated listenings?
No.
Don't know.
Okay.
That I don't know. So I'll give you that. But hearing it 3-4 times so far, each time I just found the loveliness in it. I don't
really? Know it's gonna I could cut out the middle and I'd be much happier. Because
I'll make you a version like that.
Okay, thank you. The Tony Triguardo remix.
Absolutely.
So but that's my problem with the whole thing, is it the middle part where, you know, it's supposed to be pieces like Picasso's paintings, you know. This is just like, you know, I don't know. It's much more noticeable as being pieced together. And Paul's always been able to, you know, take bits and pieces and make songs out of it. You know, Uncle Albert, Albert Halsey, side two of Abbey Road, stuff like that. And here, it's just noticeable to me. I wasn't thrilled with it. I mean, with Ginger Baker's on there shaking a tin can, for those wondering where Ginger was. And that's about it. You know,
and screaming, get off my lawn, probably.
The only thing I will say, I miss the string flourishes when he's drink to me.
Yes.
miss that very badly.
Yes, but I agree.
It's beautiful. It really is.
It is. Yeah.
And the one thing I will say on this underdubbed, while I think, again, it's way too long, I always loved this song. Again, I didn't love it initially when it first came out, but it became a favorite as over the years. But the three-part harmony.
Yeah.
So noticeable on this.
Yeah.
And that's where I was saying Linda, you know, and you hear Linda very clearly.
Definitely.
And it's, there's just a, listen, Paul and Denny, we know what they do together. All right. Listen to anything that they do. But when Linda's added, and this underdub really shows Linda on the three-part harmony, it's really lovely. And I appreciate this version for that. Other than that, I like the release version better.
I agree with you, Mitch. I think it's too long, but it's also looking for something. It's looking to be connect as, you know, as a song.
You may be right. Maybe this should have been the closer, because it just goes nowhere, you know? No, I mean, like they're all drunk and the album's over, you know?
Yeah. Do you think that one of the motivations for doing this kind of underdub thing, do you think it was the idea that, you know, Paul listening to this stuff may have been sitting there throughout thinking, wow, man, you know, me, Denny, and Linda, we made a really great little set of harmony vocalists. Like, this does reinvent Linda in a way. Yes.
But you know what? It also includes Denny a lot more, because you hear more of his stuff, and his harmonies are like higher in the mix.
Yeah.
You know, this is the only album where it's the three of them. And, well, yeah, that's right. So to me, I wonder if Denny heard this before.
There's a lot of three-part harmony on.
Yeah, but there was five people, basically. You know, Jimmy and Joe English were still on the album.
I would say they're not really harmonizing.
No, they're not harmonizing. But I'm just talking about the fact that it's just the three of them on this.
Right.
Well, and, you know, it's funny, because Revisionist History, if I'm not mistaken, and please correct me, someone, if I am, I think this was released on the day Denny died.
Really? I hope he heard it. I don't know if he did.
Second, I'm not saying he heard it or not, but what I'm saying is, Paul, in any of his words about this album, has been very kind to Denny.
Yes, he has.
How important Denny was to this album. And again, I don't know if it's because Denny passed or really feels that. I'm not. There's no negativity here. I'm just saying Denny was a really big part of Wings. And obviously, and Linda was too. You said this reinvents Linda, but quite frankly, Ram and Red Rose Speedway did too.
Definitely.
Yeah, but
of course, but I think, I mean,
that's Linda and him.
But that was credit to Paul and Linda McCartney. So
yes, but, yeah. But Linda always added, even though, again, it might not have been technically the greatest voice, it fit with what Paul was doing, or Paul made it fit with what he was doing.
That's a good point.
But it works. And I think with this underdubbed, as Tony said, yes, it I don't think it reinvents Linda, because I think she was reinvented with the earlier archives.
But I think it
definitely highlights Wings' sound, including Linda.
Right. But it's also, now don't forget, Mitch, back to that idea of it's taking the classic, it's taking the greatest album, Paul's masterpiece, and making people reevaluate Linda's contribution to
if they are, but I'm just saying a lot of people are not going to get the underdub, so they won't appreciate it. They'll get the, you know, right. regular.
Hey, I didn't mention this, but I missed her solo on Jet. You know.
Right. Yeah, right. You know, you're right. I mean,
yeah, that wasn't on the. That's not on this version. You know, so. And the last song on the album, which I think is a nice closing song, is Let Me Roll It. There are parts where the vocal is definitely different, but it seems to be the beginning parts of the verses more noticeable than the end parts of the verse.
Oh, there's definitely different vocal on here.
Yeah.
I like the released version vocal better. But this is not a bad one.
This is my go-to now, moving forward.
Oh, no, weird. Not me.
I like it a lot, but...
Yeah, I think the released vocal is too straight now. I feel like everywhere on this one where he deviates, I feel like is an improvement.
That's a good point, because the deviations are noticeable, and they are different. And he's sung this literally every concert since 1975 Australia tour. I mean, literally more than yesterday. Yesterday he doesn't play it. He's still singing "Well, Let Me Roll It." Right. So this song obviously means something to him after all these years. And the vocal, like I said, it's just a lot different, actually, if you think about it.
It is. The inflections are different.
Yep. So
he went with He went with a much more straightforward vocal on the release.
Yes.
He repeats his patterning
right
over and over. This one, he's going off the script a lot in terms of where his melodies are, and
maybe he didn't like it. That's why he decided to go more straight.
Yes,
but
he also released it as a B-sides, and maybe that was in the back of his mind too. The B-side might, get airplay. You don't want something too weird on your B-side.
There's also that weird bird ad lib in the very beginning. What the hell was that? I know. It's like, what? Where'd that come from? What were you doing?
That would be how he signals his pot dealer. That's the time.
He's going,
he'd lean out his window and he'd go, whoo! And then there's somebody would come and it's,
and Pete Townsend would show up.
Yeah, right.
He went, whoo!
So that does it for our review of Band on the Run.
Let me just add one more thing. I'm going to do a Columbo like you did.
Uh-oh, good.
I forgot to add for Picasso's last words. There's the really cool Belafonte Deo at the end.
Yes.
With the banana boat song.
Linda?
It's Linda. Well, both of them do it, but Linda does it too. And I have it written and I just forgot to mention it. Sorry.
Okay.
So.
No, it's a good point. You're always having fun on that part of the song. Why not? So, anyway, so that's the Band on the Run underdub version. Now, I got one more question about this idea of underdubness. Is there another album of Paul's where you would like to strip off the orchestration, not the production? That's another, to me, the production is pressed to play, and I hope he remixes that if he ever gets an archive version of that. But is there another album of Paul's where stripping off the orchestration would help or hinder, maybe?
I don't know, though, because I think I think it goes hand in hand. I think what you're talking about, Rob, is I think, and I agree with kind of the way you're phrasing it, but it's sort of, in the case of Band on the Run, so many variations are introduced because of orchestration. I think the album that suffered most from too much crap being poured on it has been fixed already, which I think was Pipes of Peace.
Okay.
I think the 2015 mix of Pipes of Peace is cleaner. I think he pulled some crap off of that.
What about Off the Ground?
Huh.
I don't think that has orchestration that I'd strip. That's more of a remix to me than...
Yeah, maybe. Again, we'd have to. I guess it'll have to be not album wise, Rob.
It would have to be song for song.
Songs, yeah.
Yeah.
We'll have to say, okay, that one maybe would be a cool.
Do you want to hear My Love without the orchestra?
No.
I don't want to hear Only Love Remains without the orchestra.
Right. Yeah. I don't want to hear Through Our Love without the orchestra.
And Motor of Love, don't forget.
And Motor of Love.
It's interesting that this wasn't a George Martin album where he's stripping the orchestration.
Right.
It's Tony Visconti.
Giles would have just shown up at his house beating the crap out of him. Come in, McCartney. Plam, plam, plam.
I think, look, a good album is a good album. Band on the Run is a really good album. And I think the underdubbed is important to be there because it shows what a good album it is. So I think the added value that McCartney gave us actually adds to the appreciation of the album.
Yeah, no, at this point of the 50th anniversary, it's, you know, this is when you release it. You know, it's.
But to your point, though, you know, who brought up the question about was there another album that we could do? Did Rob? Did you say
I
that?
Did, yeah.
Yeah. To your credit, though, Rob, it is interesting because you by saying that, you kind of brought around the idea that this is really the only whole album where you could have done that.
Right. No, you're right.
Like, you're not, truthfully, you know, you're not going to strip away Dear Friend. You're not. Right. You're not going to pull the orchestration out of Dear Friend and find something that, you know, in there. You're not going to pull out the horns and listen what the man said. You know,
No, that's a good point.
You know.
Or Uncle Albert.
Or Uncle Albert, yeah.
Because well, that Uncle might Albert. Be exactly. It depends, though. Uncle Albert might turn into be what Picasso was,
right,
if you strip everything out, because exactly. it's sweet that needs something. So right. Who knows? But like you said, like we just discussed, I think it'll be piecemeal with songs. And I think as we keep going on, like maybe we should keep that in the back of our mind, because hopefully when we do get London Town and Back to the Egg, God help us, please. Once we get those, then maybe when we discuss the review, maybe that could come up again and say, hey, you know, maybe Morse Moose or you know, don't let it bring you down.
No, see, I have to ask, I'd love to see the song. I'd love to hear the song London Town stripped of some
a
of
a little
that.
Bit. Yeah.
No, that's a good point. And maybe redo the video, too. But that's a whole other thing.
Yeah. I mean, London Town and With a Little Luck, both are two songs that I would like to hear them a little bit stripped of the little schmaltz, little de schmaltz.
Yeah, it's funny, though, because those, those two songs were huge. And now looking back, just like we just did with Band on the Run, we'd like to hear them a little less schmaltzy. But we may find, you know, that, you know, you don't, you know, watch what you wish for, because
the schmaltz was the glue that held.
Right. It might have been the best part of the song. Yeah.
Well, you know, it's like on Anthology too. I Am the Walrus Without the Strings is a different feel, because missing that great orchestration that George Martin wrote for that song. And plus, you know, we're diehard fans, so we notice the little things where maybe other people wouldn't care or notice it. So I'm glad it's out.
The only thing I'll say, Rob, last thing for me, is that with the underdubbed, when I first heard it and when I first saw that it was being released, especially after I heard it the first time, I was underwhelmed. I was. And now I appreciate, after listening to it again and again and again, no pun intended with Back to the Egg, I honestly, I've come to appreciate the underdubbed a lot more.
Right.
Is it vital? No. Is it added value? Yes.
Yeah, it helps you understand these songs that we've heard for, you know, many times.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, and you can't do this for other albums, or some of them you could, but Band on the Run is the one that everyone knows.
Yeah. And so, you're right about the whole value added thing, Mitch, because the idea is, let's face it, people who are really major Beatles fans, Beatles collectors, 25 years ago, we would have been running into a store to buy this on bootleg for $25.
Right. Right. No, that's right. That's
right.
No, very true.
Now you're getting it as part of the package 50 years later. It's Paul's choices, what he wanted to do. And you go, yeah, all right, something new and fun. So,
I still would have liked to have had Helen Wheels as an underdog.
Yes. Damn it.
Yeah, but it wasn't recorded that way. So
I know.
But by the way, Mitch, you mentioned two records that Paul has yet to do in archive series. I just want to add a couple others. The McCartney Interview, Press to Play, Chaos and Creation in the Backyard. The Amoeba Show was released, but I would like to see something better, because there's got to be video of it. Driving Rain and Memory Almost Full.
But Rob, you're missing the point. The London Town and Back to the Egg are the last two wings.
Right, yes. And I'm not sure.
Those should be, give us those next and get rid of the wings portion of the archive. Right. And then you could start doing whatever you want.
Whatever you want.
We need we need to give Wings their last due.
And I agree with that.
And it's due to us. It really is.
I know, especially those two albums are so opposite in sound and what Paul was trying to do with it. And it would be nice if he can go back and, you know, remind people of both of them. Though I would like to see Press to Play totally remixed. You know, I'll get that 80s you Padgham crap out of there.
Anyway.
Really, I like you. He did a nice job with Genesis. Anyway, well, that just
about, too, yeah.
And that's all.
Anyway, that just about does it for our show, the Fab Four Free For All. We're here as a podcast, or as we like to say, a radio show on the internet. Also, it's on YouTube. And if you want to watch us during the show, and we appreciate if you go to YouTube also. There's a bunch of shows up there.
Subscribe to the channel, the Fab Four.
Even if you're just listening to the audio, people, go to YouTube and subscribe, will you please? Just
and you can see, guys.
Anyway, you can see the three of us, which you know might be frightening, but
you could run away right after that.
Just, yes.
Go, oh my God, run like hell! But just subscribe.
Just click on it and subscribe. It helps us.
Yeah. Anyway, but so thank you for joining us. I've been your moderator for today's show, Rob Leonard, and joining me has been Mitch Axelrod.
Take care, folks, from Lagos.
And, of course, Tony Triguardo.
And Tony Triguardo from Mega Blocks. Oh, you said Legos, not Lego. I'm sorry.
Oh,
we have to hurry up because I'm about to get mugged.
Anyway, yeah, thanks for joining us and take care.
Fab Four Free For All was edited and produced by Tony Triguardo at Word of Mouth Studios in Westbury, New York.
The opening and closing theme is My Dolly by the band The Badge, featuring longtime listener Jeff Slate, available on its debut album Digital Retro and recent Best Of compilation, as well as from the Fab Four Free For All website.
Thanks for listening to Fab Four Free For All.